Imagine a world so small, it's just completely invisible. We're talking nanoscale here, where, atoms and molecules are the main players.
It's a completely different realm.
Exactly. And to explore it, we need some pretty amazing tools. And often, at the core of these tools, you find these incredible microscopic things called MEMS, microelectromechanical systems.
Tiny machines, basically, like sensors and motors and electronics all squished onto one tiny chip.
Integrated micro machines. So today we're going to take a deep dive into a really interesting and actually critical challenge for one of the most powerful tools we have for looking at this nanoscale world, the atomic force microscope, or AFM.
Ah, yes, the AFM, a workhorse in nanoscience.
It really is. And specifically, we're looking at this phenomenon called dynamic pull-in. We're basing this on some really fresh research, a paper just out in the Journal of Sound and Vibration in 2025.
Very recent stuff, then.
And our mission today is to kind of unpack how scientists are building these really detailed models, predicting how these ultra-sensitive instruments behave, and then actually testing it in the real world.
So, modeling, prediction, validation, the whole scientific process.
They're trying to get a handle on what sounds like a tiny glitch, this pull-in, but it actually holds the key to making nanoscale measurements even more precise. You're basically going to see some elegant math meeting real-world practical engineering.
Okay, so these MEMS devices, how do they actually, become the heart of something like an AFM?
Well, it's a great combination. The AFM is, like you said, a workhorse. It's seen as maybe the most advanced, most versatile tool for looking at surfaces down at the nanoscale.
Right, because it gives you that amazing resolution and sensitivity.
Precisely. And how it works fundamentally is you've got this microcantilever. Think of it like a tiny, tiny diving board.
With a super sharp tip at the end, atomically sharp, often.
And this tip scans across whatever sample you're looking at. And the AFM measures the incredibly small forces happening between that tip and the sample surface.
And we're talking really small forces, piconewtons sometimes, up to micronewtons maybe, tiny.
Unbelievably tiny. And these forces can be different things, right? Electrostatic, magnetic.
And critically, those van der Waals forces, those subtle attractions between molecules that only really matter when you're super close.
So by mapping these forces, you can figure out all sorts of properties, electrical, mechanical, whatever, for materials like metals, semiconductors, even biological structures.
All within like 100 nanometers or less from the surface. It's incredible proximity.
Now, how you make that cantilever move, the actuation that can be done in different ways. Electrostatic, piezoelectric.
Electrothermal, too.
But for this deep dive, we're focusing on what they call active cantilevers that use electromagnetic actuation.
Ah, using the Lorentz force. So current and a magnetic field.
And that's apparently really useful for the extremely low force measurements that are key to this new research.
Okay, so it's powerful, it's precise, but there's a catch.
There is. For all its power, there's this kind of invisible snag, this potential instability called pull-in.
Right, this happens in lots of MEMS devices, not just AFMs.
True. It's when the forces acting on these tiny parts, like our AFM cantilever, just get too strong. They cross some threshold.
And then snap, the cantilever just abruptly pulls in towards the sample surface.
Which sounds bad.
It is bad. For functionality, it completely compromises what you're trying to do. In an AFM, that pull-in can totally swamp, overshadow the actual short-range atomic forces you want to measure.
So the thing you're using to measure gets stuck or crashes because of forces other than the ones you care about.
Precisely. It makes getting that fine detail, that precise image, really difficult, sometimes impossible. So understanding pull-in, predicting when it happens, is absolutely critical if you want to design these devices properly and operate them reliably.
Okay, that makes sense. It sounds like a fundamental problem. Has it been, studied a lot?
It has, especially for MEMS devices that are actuated electrostatically or magnetically. That's pretty well understood. But according to this paper, the pull-in effect, when you're using electromagnetic actuation, needs more attention, especially when the device is operating dynamically, meaning it's oscillating or moving rapidly, not just sitting still.
So there's a gap in the knowledge specifically for this type of AFM setup operating in a certain way.
Exactly. And that's the gap this research aims to fill.
So how do you even begin to model something like that? It sounds incredibly complex down at that scale.
Well, they use a clever approach. It's called a one degree of freedom lumped parameter model.
Okay, break that down.
Instead of modeling every single atom, you simplify. You treat the main moving part, the cantilever, as a single point or lump that can move in one direction, one degree of freedom. You then figure out the key forces acting on that point.
So boil it down to the essentials.
Exactly. It's a simplification, but it's widely used and surprisingly powerful for capturing the main behavior of MEMS devices, things like sensitivity or resonant frequency, and in this case, pull-in.
Okay, so what are the essential forces in this model?
Right. First, you have the restoring force. That's just the cantilever's natural springiness wanting to return to its rest position, like a diving board bouncing back.
That makes sense. The spring constant, basically.
Sort of, yeah. Then you've got the Lorentz force. That's the electromagnetic actuation we talked about, the force coming from the magnetic field interacting with the current in the cantilever. That's what's driving the motion actively.
Okay, the push or pull from the magnetics.
Yep. And then the really crucial one, and the tricky one, the nonlinear van der Waals attraction force.
Ah, the force between the tip and the sample itself. Why nonlinear and tricky?
Nonlinear. Because it doesn't just increase proportionally with distance, it changes quite dramatically as you get very close. And it's tricky because its exact strength depends on a bunch of things. What the materials are, how rough the surface is, the exact shape of the sensor, even the tiny radius of the tip. Lots of variables.
So quite complex to nail down perfectly.
Definitely. But what's really neat is how they take all this, the springiness, the magnetic push, this complex atomic pull, and distill it down into one core mathematical equation, a dimensionless differential equation.
The signature of the cantilever's motion captured in math.
You got it. There's a term for the displacement, a term representing how strong the magnetic actuation is, and a term modeling those van der Waals forces. And they usually start the model simple. Cantilever at rest, zero velocity.
Okay, so they have this equation. What can they do with it?
This is where the real predictive power comes in. One of the paper's biggest contributions is figuring out the exact dynamic pull-in threshold. Let's call it BATE. It's a specific critical value for that magnetic excitation parameter, the BATE.
A threshold value, like a speed limit.
Kind of, yeah. So if your magnetic push is below or equal to this threshold, okay, the model predicts the cantilever will just oscillate nicely. Predictable periodic motion, that's the safe zone, what you want for AFM.
Stable operation.
Right. But if you crank up that magnetic push, so it exceeds BK.
Pull-in happens.
Instability. Game over for that measurement. And they actually provide a formula to calculate this threshold, BK, based on the van der Waals parameter K.
Wow. Okay, so you can calculate the boundary.
Yes. And to make it even more visual and practical, they created what they call an operational diagram.
A map.
Essentially, yes. Think of it as a map where the axes are, say, the van der Waals force strength, BK, and the magnetic push strength. The diagram shows you regions, combinations of K and BK, where you get stable oscillations, and regions where you get pull-in.
That sounds incredibly useful for someone actually using an AFM, a guide to staying out of trouble.
Exactly. It's a visual guide to safe operating parameters. Don't go into the red zone on the map.
Okay, so they can predict if pull-in happens. Can they predict when? Like, how quickly?
They can. The research also calculates the precise pull-in time, how long it takes from starting the motion to the actual snap, and also the period of oscillations when it is stable.
How do they calculate that? Sounds complex.
It involves some pretty advanced math tools called elliptic functions. These are useful for describing periodic motions that aren't simple sine waves, which is often the case here.
Right. And did they find anything interesting about how the pull-in time behaves?
They did. They identified two key scenarios, depending on how strong that magnetic excitation is.
Okay.
Scenario one, if the magnetic push is relatively low, less than a specific value, 12 in their dimensionless terms, something interesting happens. As the van der Waals attraction, K, gets closer and closer to a critical point, the pull-in time and the oscillation period both start to increase a lot, like unboundedly.
So it gets slower and slower, more drawn out as it approaches instability.
Exactly. It suggests the van der Waals forces are really taking over, creating this very sensitive, slow creep towards pull-in.
Okay, what's scenario two?
Scenario two. If the magnetic push is high, greater than 12, the Lorentz force, the magnetic push itself, is just dominant. In this case, the model predicts you always get pull-in eventually.
Always unstable if the push is strong enough.
Right. And interestingly here, the pull-in time actually decreases as the van der Waals force increases. And you don't see that unbounded increase in time like you did in the first scenario. It just snaps faster if the traction's also stronger.
Huh. So very different dynamics depending on whether the magnetic force or the van der Waals force is more in control.
Precisely. And understanding that difference is key for controlling these devices.
Okay, so that's the theory, the model, the predictions. Very elegant, but, you know, the real world can be messy. Did they test this experimentally?
They absolutely did. Theory is great, but you need to see if it matches reality.
What did the setup look like?
They used a fairly standard AFM setup. It had an optical beam deflection detector that's common for tracking the cantilever's movement. And crucially, one of these active electromagnetic cantilevers, they modeled specifically a KNT-STHM-3N model from a company called Kelvin Nanotechnology.
Okay.
They also needed a DC current source to run current through the cantilever and a digital oscilloscope to record the output.
And a magnet, presumably.
Oh, right, yes. A permanent magnet to provide the uniform magnetic field, about 210 millitesla in this case.
Okay, standard pieces, mostly. How do they run the experiment?
Meticulously. They'd bring the cantilever into contact with the surface, apply a specific DC current, let things settle, reach steady state, and then expose it to the magnetic field to initiate the motion or pull in.
And they varied things.
Yep. They repeated this for different initial distances between the tip and sample they mentioned, 7 micrometers and 2.5 micrometers, and also different current intensities, like 1 milliamp and 2 milliamps, which changes that magnetic force.
So trying to probe different points on that operational diagram they predicted. Exactly. But as you hinted, experiments like this are challenging. What were some of the hurdles?
Well, one big one they mentioned is just calibrating the data. The detector measures voltage changes based on the laser deflection, but you need to convert that accurately into the actual physical displacement of the cantilever tip in nanometers. That's not trivial.
Keeping the scale right.
Right. Then there's always measurement noise you have to deal with. And a really tricky part was getting a precise value for that van der Waals coefficient, the K parameter in the model. Or AV in some context.
Why is it so hard to pin down?
Because it depends on so many microscopic details that are hard to know perfectly. Like the exact curvature of the tip isn't always perfectly known. There might be unknown thin layers of stuff like adhesive or contaminants on the surfaces, tiny bumps and irregularities. All of these things affect the van der Waals force in ways that are hard to account for perfectly in a simple model.
Real world messiness.
Exactly. Plus, another key point, their initial theoretical model neglected viscous damping, you know, like air resistance slowing down the cantilever's motion.
Ah, friction.
Essentially, yeah. And that damping effect can actually be quite significant, especially they found when the magnetic excitation is so small.
So the model wasn't perfectly complete in that sense.
No model ever is, right?
Oh.
But despite these complexities, the calibration, the noise, estimating K, the neglected damping, how did the results look?
Pretty good, actually. They found their theory was successfully cross-checked with the experimental data.
That's great news for the model.
Yeah. They did see some discrepancies, as you'd expect. And they noted these were more obvious when the magnetic excitation was smaller, which is where they figured that neglected damping played a bigger role.
Makes sense. Damping would slow things down compared to the frictionless model.
Right. But interestingly, they found that for larger magnetic values, when they used a higher current, a stronger magnetic push, the error between the model and the experiment was mitigated. It got smaller.
So when the magnetic force was dominant, the model seemed to perform remarkably well, even with its simplifications.
Exactly. It suggests the model really captures the core physics well, especially under those higher force conditions, giving them a solid tool for predicting that critical pull-in behavior.
Fantastic. So pulling it all together then.
Right. So we've journeyed into this a tiny world of MEMS and AFMs, and we've really dug into this critical issue of dynamic pull-in. We saw how scientists can build a surprisingly elegant mathematical model to predict how these microscopic cantilevers behave.
Distinguishing between stable, useful oscillations and that catastrophic pull-in snap.
Yep. And we saw how those predictions, despite the real-world complexities, actually hold up pretty well when tested in the lab.
And this model isn't just, you know, a nice piece of math. The researchers call it a pivotal step in understanding adhesion phenomena and dynamic processes realized with MEMS devices.
It really tackles a key gap, like we discussed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where does this lead? What are the future implications?
Well, the predictive power here has some really practical applications. You could use this model, for instance, to forecast the absolute minimum safe distance you can bring the cantilever to the surface without risking pull-in.
Or the maximum force you can apply. Super important for AFM, especially if you're trying to do very delicate, low-force measurements.
Definitely. It could also help us understand how oscillations are damped or slowed down when the tip is very close to the surface.
Which might lead to faster AFM scanning, if you can better account for or even minimize that damping near the surface.
Potentially, yeah, by lowering the time constant, perhaps. And another really interesting avenue they mention is using the model itself as a tool.
How so?
By comparing the model's predictions to experimental results, you could potentially work backward to get better estimates of those tricky adhesion coefficients, the van der Waals parameter K. Like, tune the model until it matches the experiment perfectly, and the value of K you end up with is your estimate.
Ah, using model optimization to probe material properties. That's clever. A new tool for material science.
Right. So think about it. Mastering these tiny invisible forces, predicting their limits, it's not just about making current tools better.
It opens up possibilities.
Exactly. It could lead to totally new ways to design materials from the atom up, or understand how biological molecules interact, or even manipulate matter at the most fundamental level.
Made possible by combining these incredibly sensitive physical tools with increasingly precise mathematical models.
So the provocative thought maybe is, what other secrets of the nanoscale are waiting to be unlocked as we get better and better at understanding and controlling these forces, thanks to work like this? What mysteries will these tools help us unravel next?